வித்யாலயில பிரவேச அஷ்டதர சதசி சீமன் சுவாங்கே அபாய சரண அரவிந்த பக்திவேதாந்த சுவாமி ஸ்ரீ பிரபுபாத் கீ ஜெய். பிரேம்சகோ ஸ்ரீ கிருஷ்ண சைதன்ய பிரபுணிதானந்த ஸ்வேத சிகராதா சிவாசி ஸ்ரீ கௌர பக்திவிந்த கீ ஜெய். ஸ்ரீ ஸ்ரீராதா ஷாம சுந்தர கோபா கோபிநாத ஷாமகுந்த ராதா குந்த கீட கோபதான் கீ ஜெய். ஸ்ரீமத் பகவதாம் கீ ஜெய். ஸ்ரீ ஹரிநாம் சங்கீர்த்தன் கீ ஜெய். கௌர பகவந்தே. ஆல் க்ளோரி ஸ்ரீ தேவசம் ஆஃப் த டிவோட்டீஸ். ஆல் க்ளோரி ஸ்ரீ தேவசம் ஆஃப் த டிவோட்டீஸ். All glory to the assembly of the devotees. All glory to the Lord Sri 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 Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 7, verses 69 to 74. We'll chant verse 69. Anurupanukula chan Yasyame pati devata Sunye gihe mamsat yajya Pratputrar svayati sadhuri அனுருபானுகூலசாம் யஸ்யமே பதி தேவதாம் சுன்யே க்ரிஹே சுன்யே க்ரிஹே மம் சத்யஜ்யாம் புத்ரை ஸ்வயதி சாருபே அனுருபானுகூலசாம் யஸ்யமே பதி தேவதா சுன்யே க்ரிஹே மம் சத்யஜ்யாம் புத்ரை ஸ்வயதி சாருபே. Bhaktivedanta Academy students,
Anurupanukulacha, Anurupanukulacha, Yasya
Wonderful chanting of the verse, students. Anurupa, suitable. Anukula, faithful. Cha, and. Yasya, of whom. Me, of me. Pati Devata, she who accepted her husband as a worshipable deity. Sunye, empty. Grihe, in the home. Mam, me. Satyajya, leaving behind. Putrai, along with her sons. Sva, to heaven. Yati, is going. Sadubi, saintly. Translation. My wife and I were an ideal match. She always faithfully obeyed me and in fact accepted me as her worshipable deity. But now seeing her children lost and her home empty, she has left me behind and gone to heaven with our saintly children. Can you repeat? My wife and I were an ideal match. She always faithfully obeyed me. And in fact accepted me as her worshipable deity. But now, seeing her children lost and her home empty, she has left me behind and gone to heaven with our saintly children. We'll do the rest of the verses, verse by verse, throughout the class here. Om Jnana Timaranda Syajan Anjana Shalakaya Chaksuhun Manitamina Tasmai Sri Guru Vinamaha Mukam Koroti Vachalam Pandum Nam Jaya Ke Virim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Guru Dimantarina Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bahivacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So I looked at this verse and one question came to my mind. Did my wife pick out this verse? Maybe the first sentence of it. After that it becomes questionable. So, even though yesterday Nagaraj brought us up to speed, so to speak, with the storyline, because we have the students here and they haven't attended all of the classes, I did want to take a moment and just briefly read through these verses that have brought us up to this point in the story of the pigeon. There was once a pigeon who lived in the forest along with his wife. He had built a nest within a tree and lived there for several years in her company. The two pigeons were very much devoted to their household duties, their hearts being tied together by sentimental affection. They were each attracted to each other's glances, bodily features, and state of mind. Thus, they completely bound each other in affection. Sounds like a very lovely relationship. Naively trusting in the future, they carried out their acts of resting, sitting, walking, standing, conversing, playing, eating, and so forth, as a loving couple among the trees of the forest. Whenever she desired anything, O king, the she pigeon would flatteringly cajole her husband, and he in turn would gratify her by faithfully doing whatever she wanted, even with great personal difficulty. Thus, he could not control his senses in her association. Then the female pigeon experienced her first pregnancy. When the time arrived, the chaste lady pigeon delivered a number of eggs within the nest in the presence of her husband. When the time was ripe, baby pigeons with tender limbs and feathers created by the inconceivable potencies of the Lord were born from those eggs. The two pigeons became most affectionate to their children and took great pleasure in listening to their awkward chirping, which sounded very pleasing to the parents. Thus, with love, they began to raise little birds who were born of them. The parent birds became very joyful by observing the soft wings of their children, their chirping, their lovely, innocent movements around the nest and their attempts to jump up and fly. Seeing the children happy, the parents were also happy. Their hearts bound to each other by affection, these foolish birds, completely bewildered by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu, continued to take care of the young offspring who had been born of them. One day, the two heads of the family were out to find food for the children. Being very anxious to feed their offspring properly, they wandered all over the forest for a long time. At this time, a certain hunter, who happened to be wandering through the forest, saw the young pigeons moving about near their nest. Spreading out his net, he captured them all. The pigeon and his wife were always anxious for the maintenance of their children, and they were wandering in the forest for that purpose. Having obtained proper food, they now returned to the nest. When the lady pigeon caught sight of her own children trapped with the hunter's nest, she was overwhelmed with anguish and crying out, she rushed toward them as they cried out to her in return. The lady pigeon had always allowed herself to be bound by the ropes of intense maternal affection, and thus her mind was overwhelmed by anguish. Being in the grip of the illusory energy of the Lord, she completely forgot herself, and rushing forward to help her helpless children, she was immediately bound also in the net of the hunter. Seeing his own children, who were more dear to him than life itself, fatally bound in the hunter's net, along with his dearmost wife, whom he considered equal in every way to himself, the poor male pigeon began to lament wretchedly. The male pigeon said, alas, just see how I am destroyed. I am obviously a great fool, for I did not properly execute pious activities. I could not satisfy myself, nor could I fulfill the purpose of my life. My dear family, which is the basis of my religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, is now hopelessly ruined. And then today, my wife and I were an ideal match. She always faithfully obeyed me and, in fact, accepted me as her worshipable deity. But now, seeing her children lost and her home empty, she has left me behind and gone to heaven with our saintly children. Just a perfect scenario for describing the optimum goal of family life. We see that this story, if we look at it from an analytical point of view, it's a very good example of society at large. The purpose of these stories, this type of story in the Bhagavatam, is much like the parables that we find in the New Testament of the Bible that Jesus taught, and they're to instruct us in our daily activities in a simple matter that makes it easier for us to equate the subject. Much like the traveling mendicants, the sages of both olden and current times, that they would travel and then stop in householders' homes and spend time speaking to the householders to instruct them about their spiritual life. In ancient times, this was always a scenario we saw in the incarnations of Ramchandra and the incarnations of all the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Regularly, sages would stop by the homes of the householders and give them instructions and advice and guidance and be very warmly received, because their purpose was to help to uplift. As householders, as family members, we do tend to get a little sidetracked from one point focus in devotional service. This is understandable. You know, we have house payments, car payments, school payments, job responsibilities, social obligations. All of these things come in there. And at a younger age, we have our sport activities to keep up, to stay healthy and strong. We have our academic studies to always be focused on. Fortunately, you students have Krishna in the center of your academic studies. If you go just down the road here to this Mabane, or a little further to Santa Fe, there's no Krishna there. So you may find at some point in your life you'll be in an academic scenario where Krishna is not the center. These formative years that you've got will give you the strength to get through that and still be Krishna conscious. So in this way, the sages would travel like this and give instruction and guidance to the householders who had so many other things on their plate. Now, this particular chapter, it's a layered story, as I often refer to. We have Lord Krishna, who's instructing his best friend Uddhava. And he's telling him the story of an ancient king whose name was King Yadu. And the instructions King Yadu received from this traveling Avadhuta. I have a question for the Bhaktivedanta Academy students. Which Vaishnavacharya that you've learned about was sometimes referred to as an Avadhuta? Lord Nityananda. Yes, thank you very much. So this Avadhuta, he notes that while living the life of a mendicant, wandering in the forest in this way, he obtained 24 gurus from Mother Nature. Now this is kind of interesting because, I mean, we all strive to find a spiritual master and take initiation, and that's our guru. Well, that's our Diksha Guru. Shiksha Guru means one who instructs, and that Shiksha Guru may be present in so many different manners. So this Avadhuta was able to see in the workings of nature instructions on spiritual life from 24 different resources. Trees, wind, the sun, or in this case, the pigeon. And these instructions were very pertinent to him. Now, this kind of reminds us the scenario here of the teachings of Chanakya Pandit. I was, how many students have heard of Chanakya Pandit? Familiar with him? Some of you? Okay. So, Srila Prabhupada was quite fond of quoting Chanakya Pandit. Actually, I thought he was much more fond than I found out. I figured, oh, Prabhupada, he's probably mentioned Chanakya Pandit a couple hundred times. So I went to Veda Base and I typed it in. We have 48 times. So it's not quite as often as you think. But Prabhupada regularly referred to Chanakya Pandit in his lectures and classes because he had a very similar style of presenting philosophy in a very practical, easy-to-understand method that kind of somewhat removed the philosophical depths of it while giving a practical explanation in a way that easily could be understood. So in a similar way, we see that the Avadhuta is doing the same thing. He's talking about how wherever he goes and whatever activity he performs, he's able to see the spiritual presence. And this is what a wandering mendicant does, is he sees the spiritual energy in all creatures. Now, maybe some of the students in the Bhaktivedanta Academy can tell me, what time of year is it that a mendicant does not wander? Who knows? During the rainy season, yes, during Chaturmasya, stays in one place and performs great austerities. So, such stages, they would spend their time training themselves to actually see the spiritual presence, to see the spirit soul in every living being. Does anybody know a Bhagavad Gita verse that captures this point? Being able to see the spirit soul in every living being. And the translation? In your words. Very good, very good. Yes, that the mendicant looks at every creature and sees the Paramatma, the Super Soul, present in that creature. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So, here we go, confirmation. So, such a sage as this Avadhuta Brahmana would make his life living in the forest, and he would be very happy to do so. And he actually would have quite a good time in the forest. I mean, maybe not in the sense that we do. You know, you go to the forest or they go out to the woods for camping or, you know, to build a fire, swimming in the rivers or, you know, maybe picking some flowers or making some s'mores. You know, these aren't the particular activities the Avadhuta engaged in while living in the forest. As he moved through the forest, he trained himself to see everything in its spiritual context. And this is very important for us because as we move through the forest of this world, we should train ourselves by dint of our association and the instructions we receive from our mothers and fathers and our teachers and whatever our 24 gurus are, how to see the Lord's presence everywhere. So this chapter itself is a complete list of all these instructions. And these instructions are meant for one purpose, to help us advance in spiritual life. Who's interested in advancing in spiritual consciousness? Good, I was waiting for every hand in the room to go up, otherwise we're in the wrong place at this hour of the morning. We should be in the traffic going to work, or we should be sitting at home watching whatever. Or if you're here, that means you're interested in putting your spiritual life on the front burner. You know, just like when you're cooking in the kitchen, you have the back burners are a little bit lower on power or gas, and you put the things that are going to take a little longer back there, but the stuff you really want to work on and spend a lot of energy and focus on, you put on a higher flame and burn to the front burner. So that's where that phrase comes from. Put your spiritual life on the front burner. In other words, turn the heat up and pay attention. So that's what we're finding here. Now, Nagaraj also noted in yesterday's class quite nicely that the underlying factor of our sampradaya, of our line, is renunciation. I mean, after all, Lord Chaitanya left his wife and his elderly mother and took sannyasa at a very young age. But we can understand this was Lord Chaitanya's particular lila. In our own case here within our ISKCON society, we've seen how unsuccessful this young sannyasi program has worked out. So therefore, as Nagaraj also mentioned, nowadays we have more of a focus on stable marriages, on strong families, and on solid societies. These are the circumstances that the majority of us find ourselves in, or in your case, will in the future. The renunciate portion of society is always the smaller portion. I mean, you look around our community, how many brahmacharis do we have here in this temple? You know, I mean, maybe you can count them on one hand. You know, and as Nagaraj also said, you know, we have many different ashrams now. You know, so, the majority of us are going to be in this circumstance of life, of raising families, having responsibilities for a job and things of this nature. So, developing an understanding of how to incorporate renunciation into that lifestyle is very important. And this is what Srila Prabhupada taught, not that we just abandon everything and, you know, go off and just take sannyas like that, but that we have obligations, fulfill those, and at the same time push forward a renunciate mood of not being attached to material consciousness. Now, nonetheless, if we look at our sampradaya, the majority number of our acharyas are in the renounced order of life. Can any of the students, let's name six great Vaishnava acharyas that were renunciates, sannyasis. Give me one. Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami. Sanatan Goswami. Rupa Goswami. Huh? Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. Gopal Bhatta Goswami. One more. Raghunath Das Goswami. Very good. Thank you. So these are the prominent personalities who we call the six Goswamis. They were very much in a mood of renunciation. Not all of them were renunciates at the very beginning of their life, though. So they had the opportunity to practice both activities and show by their example. This is, of course, the meaning of the word acharya. But we shouldn't forget that there are just as many married members in our line who served as acharyas also. Let's see if you can name six Vaishnava acharyas that were married that had family responsibilities. Gauranga? Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Lord Nityananda. Ah, you just get it. Come on, students. Huh? Advaita Acharya? Can we get three more? Don't make me bring the adults in on this. Srila Prabhupada? All right, yeah. Two more. Come on, I know I've talked to you about acharyas that are married. All right, what about Shivananda Singh? What about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? So there's six. You can go on and on like that. So Srila Prabhupada also points out in his classes that we have the Mahajans. Everybody knows who the Mahajans are, right? The 12 great preachers and presenters of Krishna consciousness. And most of them were householders. Let's see if we can name the Mahajans. I know y'all can do it. Oh, right off the bat. Lord Shiva. Nardamuni. Bali Maharaj. Bhishma. Prahlad Maharaj. No question mark wasn't. Yes, right, Thomas. Yamaraj. Brahma. Now, Brahma, yeah. Well, what about Janak Maharaj, Sukadev Goswami, Swayambhuva, Kapila Dev, the four Kumaras? So if we go through that list, Lord Brahma, he was a householder. Narada Muni, he was a renunciate. Lord Shiva, he was a householder. The four Kumaras, renunciates. Lord Kapila Dev, renunciate. Swayambhuva Manu, householder. Prahlad Maharaj, householder. Janaka Maharaj, householder. Grandfather Bhishma, renunciate. Bali Maharaj, householder. Sukadev Goswami, renunciate. And Yamaraj, householder. Yes, so 7-5 in favor of the householders, yeah. But ultimately, as Lord Chaitanya taught, we're not householders, we're not grihasthas, we're not brahmacharis, we're not sannyasis. Ultimately, we're servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the important thing, that we may have a destination in our particular ashram that describes our activity, but this doesn't label us as what we practice in Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness is beyond these different labels. So in this first verse here, we see that even though the pigeon wife was very attached to the pigeon husband, when the children were in danger, right, her very first move, without thinking of her own safety or her own well-being, was to go to the rescue of the children. And I think we can find this in every species, that the mother is always looking out for the children's well-being. Srila Prabhupada would often speak about the completeness of that loving mood between the mother and the child. He would say when chanting that the chanting of the child should be like the calling on the mother, you know, please help me. I have a question for the students. What article of clothing does Prabhupada mention reminds the mother of her child? The shoes, yes, very good. So, now here's another point here. The pigeon father refers to his children here as my saintly children. Now, of course, it is an absolute fact that every parent's children are saintly and pure. And if you don't believe me, just ask them. So even the pigeon knows that his children are very saintly, that they're gone back to heaven with their mother. So we move on to the second verse. Now, the second verse, translation, now I am a wretched person living in an empty home. My wife is dead. My children are dead. Why should I possibly want to live? My heart is so pained by separation from my family that life itself has simply become suffering. Now, this verse shows the foolish plight of this overly attached pigeon father. Without my wife, without my children, my home is of no use. That means my life is of no use. And, well, quite frankly, for the materialistic person, that's true. If they don't have the wife and the children in the home, what is the benefit of the home? Because they've missed one thing. There is no Krishna in the home. This is why Prabhupada stressed it in every home. There must be the Archimurti. There must be the worship of the deity. The whole house is certainly going to be empty without Krishna there. When we have Krishna present, Prabhupada said every householder must have an altar in their home so that the home becomes a temple and not just a place for sense, how to Prabhupada say it, sense gratificatory activities. Although the way Prabhupada would create these words that you really won't find in the dictionary, but completely say it all. Sense gratificatory activities. So this is what the home is like when there is no presence of Krishna consciousness. This is why all of you have Krishna consciousness in your home, because it's part of that package of helping us to go back to home, back to Godhead, and even the children. Here at the temple, it's a little more difficult for the kids to be able to directly serve Radha Shyam Sundar. But in your homes, it's very simple to be able to engage in assisting the parents in worshiping the deity, to take up some responsibility. I know some students here that bathe and dress the deities in their home all by themselves. So this is a very important part of it. Everything that is connected to the home thus becomes part of the service to Krishna. All the food that we eat becomes prasadam because it's offered to Krishna. Matter of fact, there was one personality who ate a mango before it was offered and took a vow never to eat a mango again the rest of his life. Who was that? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, yes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought some mangoes into the house, and a very young, innocent little child, under 5 years old, oh, good a mango, yeah, I love mangoes. And Bhaktivinoda just lightly admonished him, oh, you're taking before the deity? You think you can enjoy before the deity can? Bhakti Siddhanta was so serious, oh, I will never eat mango again in this life, I'm a big offender. So, this isn't what's expected, that, you know, you take such heavy vows, but the idea of having the deity in makes the home Krishna conscious. Now, the father pigeon was correct in his understanding here. What is his understanding? Oh, the home is useless, the wife's gone, the children are gone, my life is empty. If he were a Vaishnava. Because for a Vaishnava to be without Krishna, for a devotee to not have Krishna consciousness present in their life, this is simply suffering. Matter of fact, without the Lord, the existence of being in this world is just more than the devotee wants to tolerate. Actually, Lord Chaitanya said something about this. Anybody know what Lord Chaitanya said about not having Krishna in your life, being separated from him? Shikshastaka verse, anybody? Any of the students? I'll open this up to the adults. You have, no? No, Ron? All right. Yes?
A moment feels like 12 years or more.
Yes. I was going to give extra credit to the students if they get the verse number on it too, but it's the seventh verse. Oh, Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain, and I am feeling all vacant in the world in your absence. This is exactly what the pigeon father is expressing. It's just that he's expressing it about his wife and children and not Govinda. This is how we should feel separation. This is the example that Lord Chaitanya gave us, to feel this type of separation from the Lord. And what happens in the third verse is even more interesting. Translation, as the father pigeon wretchedly stared at his poor children trapped in the net and on the very verge of death, pathetically struggling to free themselves, his mind went blank, and thus he himself fell into the hunter's net. Now this is classic Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, 62-63. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment, and from that detachment, lust arises, from lust, anger comes, from anger, delusion, from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When the memory is bewildered, the intelligence is lost, or the mind goes blank. And when the intelligence is lost or the mind is blank, one falls down into the material pool or into the net of the hunter. So due to this excessive attachment, without having any Krishna consciousness there, the father pigeon is now completely bereft. Now the word used in this verse, wretchedly, you can just imagine, if you will, the look of anguish that must have been on this poor pigeon father's face as he looked and saw his poor children and wife trapped in this net, and he's not able to do anything to save them. This look, you know, this just complete confusion. And it caused him to go completely blank, and then he also fell into it. Now, if you've ever watched Anupayini and her dancers perform, and I know you all have, her ability to make these facial expressions is very unique like this. I'm sure she could show us what this wretched face would look like, you know, when the attachment for that little bird. She's very expert at showing all these emotions. It's one of the types of training she gives. So this falling into the net, it mentions, this is a very accurate description of what it's like when we leave Krishna consciousness. When we leave our service to the Lord as our primary goal in life, we fall. And how do we fall? We fall into a great amount of suffering keeping ourselves separate from Krishna. At any rate, our unhappy pigeon father has now followed the course of his wife and of his children, and they're all in the net together. So, I mean, wouldn't he be happy? The whole family's there together. They just happen to be in a net. Prabhupada was preaching one time, and he was telling about a preacher who was accosting a man, "You're a drunkard. You are such a nonsense drunkard, you're going to hell. And who has taught you to drink? Oh, my father is drunk. He is going to hell also. And who has taught him to drink? His father taught him. Oh, he's going to hell also." And the man said, "Oh, that's very good. We'll all be in hell drinking together then. We'll be very happy." So this is not the kind of happiness we want, to be entangled. We're all entangled together. Oh, we're so happy like this. No, we want our happiness to be in executing Krishna consciousness. Now we go to the next verse, the fourth verse. Translation, the cruel hunter, having fulfilled his desire by capturing the head pigeon, his wife, and all of their children, set off for his own home. Now, this fourth verse is talking about the very cruel, but very happy hunter. He's got what he wanted. What was he doing? He went out hunting to capture something. Not only did he capture something, he captured a whole bunch of somethings, a whole family of somethings. So he is very, very happy now. But, as it describes him, he's very, very cruel. It's like the guys I work with. They are very, very happy to bring in photos and stories of their endless escapades, devouring and hunting an endless list of animals, from deers to fish to pigs, and all of the activities and posing next to them and trying to get some great pleasure out of this activity. And they're filled with such joy at sharing their accomplishments. But, like our pigeon captioning hunter here, they don't know that because they are cruel, they have a life of cruelty ahead of them. They are going to take birth after birth after birth for each of the animals that they are involved in slaughtering. So they may be very happy right now. They may be posing next to this dead carcass they've just joyfully slaughtered and think this is going to be a great source of pleasure for them. But in the future, they're not going to be laughing it off. And even when I tell them this, I say, "Well, you know, that's your karma." I tell them point blank, you know, "Please don't show me the pictures of your karmic activities where you're killing it," you know, like that. They just laugh it off. They don't think anything about karma. Yeah, they don't have any of that, you know. But your action will come to them. So now the pigeon hunter, he's very, very happy. He's got the entire pigeon family, and he's going to take it home to his own family. And we can understand that he must have a family. He's got a home, and he's out hunting to bring food into the home for them. They must be very low class if they're eating pigeons. I mean, you know, I lived in New York for many, many years. I mean, even if I wasn't a devotee, even if I wasn't a vegetarian, pigeons are really low on the list of what I'm going to eat. So, but the family is going to benefit from his hunting. But will they share in the sinful reaction that he's going to get? Prabhupada tells a story about this, of course. And the family is asked, "Oh, you share in your father's sinful activity?" "No, no, I'm not sharing. That's his doing. He's just supplying for us." So, then we move on to the fifth verse here today. In this way, one who is too attached to family life becomes disturbed at the heart. Like the pigeon, he tries to find pleasure in mundane sex attraction. Busily engaged in maintaining his own family, the miserly person is fated to suffer greatly along with all his family members. So the family members may say, "Oh, no, you just take the suffering. I'm not going to take that." But according to Bhagavatam, they're all going to share equally. Now, in this verse, the Avadhuta, remember the Avadhuta? This isn't just about the pigeons. The Avadhuta is telling this story. He brings the story to a close and gives the conclusion. This is what a saintly person does. He may tell these different examples or parables or, you know, Chanakya Pandit maxims, if you will, to express a point. But then at the end, he concludes it all with the spiritual delivery. And the spiritual delivery is right here. That after all this, he brings the point to focus the householder's attention on what they should be achieving, the punchline. And what is the punchline in the story? Don't be attached. The punchline isn't don't have a family. The punchline isn't don't have children.
The punchline isn't don't raise them nicely. The punchline isn't don't provide for them properly. The punchline is don't be overly attached. Now that's a little hard to say when the kids are just so darn cute. Well, some of you. Some of you are a little less than cute some of the time. I've raised some, I can tell you. But at any rate, it's difficult. But by keeping Krishna in the center of that equation, that attachment becomes properly channeled because you become attached to them being devotees of the Lord. So the final sentence in this verse says it all. Busily engaged in maintaining his own family, the miserly person is fated to suffer greatly. Miserly person. Now, who's a miserly person? Well, if someone has lots of gold, but they don't share it for the benefit of others, they're miserly. Or if someone has lots of food, you know, you have all the Mahaprasadam, or you get a whole batch of good cookies, and you don't share them with anybody, you're a miser. No, I can eat 24 cookies all by myself. Thank you very much. No, I'll eat three and give the other 20, how many? 20? 21, thank you. I'll give the other 21 to my friends. Right? So, you know, but most important and relevant to us, if one has knowledge, like the Avadutta does, or like what Srila Prabhupada has given to us, and does not share that knowledge, one is also a miser. So we don't want to be classified as misers. The fifth canto describes the different types of hellish planets that await those who are misers. And they're all a lot of suffering. But our duty is to free those persons who are attached from their suffering condition by not being misers ourselves and sharing Krishna consciousness with them. And it can come in many forms. In the books, in prasadam, in the rathyatras, in kirtan, so on and so on. There are many different ways to share Krishna consciousness. This prevents us from being misers and helps to deliver those who are in the miserly condition. So, our final verse in this chapter, and in my collection of verses today, the doors of liberation are opened wide to one who has achieved human life. But if a human being simply devotes himself to family life like the foolish bird in this story, then he is considered as one who has climbed to a very high place only to trip and fall down. Now, this fifth verse is very, very important. This is where the Avadutta not only has given the instruction, given the conclusion, but gives hope and light at the end of the tunnel. So if we're a human being, the doors to liberation or the doors to bhakti are wide open. We can go back to home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada confirms it. It can be done. There is hope for us. There is light at the end of the temple, at the end of the tunnel. But what if we don't? Well, this verse says, if we don't get that liberation, it's like one who's gone to a high place and then fallen down. Now, no doubt this is due to my poor upbringing that I think like this, but whenever I think of falling down from a very high place, I cannot help but think of the old Roadrunner cartoons and Wile E. Coyote. Now, Wile E. Coyote would struggle to get up to the top of this big mountain, and it wasn't going downhill, get to the very top of this mountain with the whole goal of pushing this anvil over the edge so that it would fall down and fall on top of the Roadrunner. But he would always forget that the rope tied around the anvil was tied to his foot. He forgot to untie it. So when the anvil went over, Wile E. Coyote went down. He fell down also. Or he would forget to let go of the anvil, and he'd be going down with it. And then as he's going down, he suddenly realizes it and lets go. And if you remember those cartoons, maybe you haven't seen them, hopefully not, but at any rate, it looks like it's from here to eternity all the way down. And then he starts going faster, and he hits the ground first, and looks up only to see this large anvil come down and crash on his head. And this was what his fulfillment was. Now, you know, he never ran out of anvils. He never ran out of ropes or whatever else the Acme company would send him. What caused me to think, if he was rich enough to order something from the Acme company every time he turned around, why don't you just go buy a meal? Anyway, that's a different story. So, but what was really amazing about Wile E. Coyote, he never gave up.
He never achieved his goal, and for 68 years since he first started this business, 1949, since he first started this business, for 68 years, he keeps trying and trying and trying to attain sense gratification. And every single time he gets a rock on the head or an anvil or runs into a wall, he's never successful. His material desires are never fulfilled. So, almost an entire life. So the question is, are we going to be like that? We're actually worse than that. We've been in this material world for thousands and thousands and thousands of births. And we haven't been successful in sense gratification either. Yet we keep trying. So here we are at the end of another chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we have to ask ourselves, am I ready to surrender yet? Am I going to keep jumping off of this cliff and crashing into the bottom? Or am I going to give this up and finally accept Krishna consciousness in a very meaningful way? Alright, so we can only pray that the answer to this question is yes, that we are ready to surrender, yes, that we do want to give up our attachments, and yes, that we do want to go back to home, back to Godhead by this process of devotional service. Coming every day, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, performing our devotional activities, engaging in worshiping the deities, chanting the holy name, having kirtan, listening to all that. These are all the activities which will give us that opportunity to hopefully not end up like Wile E. Coyote and having to take year after year doing the same dumb activity. So we'll finish there. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 7. If anybody has any questions, as long as they don't deal with learning tunes, I'll try and answer them. Yes, Prangavendra Prabhu.
I was meditating on your beginning class, you emphasizing that ashram, Grihastha ashram and renunciate ashram. But what last few months, I'm studying a little more on Prabhupada's different commentary on renunciation. And few points stands out in my own thought right now. Prabhupada says renunciation is the result of genuine spiritual emotion. So then when I think about it, then I think of Prabhupada's letter to Hansadutt Maharaj that you all are householder, but actually you are better, you are as good as renouncing. So I think the same thread, common thread going through Prabhupada's speaking or the letter even to Hansadutt Maharaj, that actually we all are renouncing in a sense, that we are all doing sadhana bhakti, those who are doing sadhana bhakti, then they are all renouncing, not necessarily talking about ashram in a sense, what I understand from Prabhupada, that our deep emotional attachment to Krishna is not a deprivation. It's rather reconnection and satisfaction. So it's a very glorious in a sense.
It connects to the very essence of our teachings, that we're not this external identity. We're not the external activity, we're not the external ashram, but we're the internal consciousness. And that consciousness we have in any ashram, we have the full opportunity to become Krishna conscious according to our own application and desire. This is the very teaching of Mahaprabhu, Narottam Das Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta, Srila Prabhupada. This is our line. Don't get caught up in the externals. You have to act according to what ashram you're in, but realize that it's only a facility to become Krishna conscious. Yeah, absolutely. Anyone else? No? Right on time. We'll finish there. What's that?
The coyote never died, so he must have been Leela because his spiritual body.
Either that or he's got good writers. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. I'm here.